reclaiming who you really are and helping you remember what you didn't know you'd forgotten. Broadcasting to the world, you are listening to Michael Lilborn Williams and the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, November 2, 2018. Broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we help you reclaim who you really are and help you remember what you didn't know you'd forgotten. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, where we say that a text without a context is a pretext for a subtext. But right now from Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, Mr. Michael Williams. How are you? Hello. Hello, Michael.
Michael Williams.
Winkle, hello, Willy Wee Willy Winkle. How are you? How are you,
hello. Mate? Hello. Hello, Waddle Wuck.
Oh boy.
Good morning, my friend. Or I should say good evening. In November the 2nd, how did this happen? I have 12 days left,
mate,
in Florida.
You keep worrying about the day. 2018, how did that happen? I'll worry about the year.
Yeah, my goodness. I remember so clearly, and it was just last year, I know it was, that we were anticipating the consequences of the year 2000. And, you know, the world was coming to an end, and people were stocking up rations in the hills and the Catskills and the Appalachians.
Oh, boy.
The Sierra Nevadas. Goodness gracious. It was, everybody was headed for the hills. And all of the things that were supposed to happen in the year 2000, of course, none of them happened. It's been a rough ride since then. But
well, I would like to go back to last century sometimes.
Yeah, doesn't that sound weird? You know, for those of us that were born mid-century, and I've told this story several times, it still shocks me. I began to realize that I was old when I walked in an antique store in Palm Springs and saw my mother's furniture there.
Yeah, well, three plaster ducks on the wall. You remember that?
No, I don't.
Oh, that was a big thing in Australia. We, you know, every three plaster ducks, and they're all kind of in order, going down at an angle and flying into formation. Somebody wrote a song about it.
I do remember all the ducks. Ducks with bows around their necks. Oh, goodness. When I remember when I would going around trying to buy furniture and things like that as a kind of a different life started for me. After 2000, I swore there would never be a duck with a bow around its neck anywhere around my property ever again. So,
How's the pond, by the way?
The pond is low. Oh, my gosh.
Are the ducks on it?
Well, yeah, what little bit of water. They're almost running into each other.
I got a gun.
Now you got to stop right there. Goodness, you would be so far under the jail down here.
Do you want to get rid of those ducks with the bow?
We don't need to. Well, no, these don't have a bow around their neck.
Oh, so it was a bow you had a problem with, not the duck.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, ducks with bows around their necks. No, we'll deal with the problem once they start wearing bow ties. So.
Well, Michael, we've been in Galatians, and we're going to continue in Galatians today. In fact, we're going to start on the last chapter, chapter 6 of Galatians.
We are,
and
yes.
And we have been having an adventure.
It has been an adventure. I cannot tell you. Everyone knows that the book of Galatians, from the moment truth began to dawn in my heart, to any degree, the book of Galatians has been the centerpiece of that dawning. I think for most people who understand anything about grace, the book of Galatians has been their entrance for the most part. And the very verses that you say that you heard all those many years ago in Australia in a teaching tape, came right out of the book of Galatians, I think. Is that right?
Yep. Yes, they did. The tape was called Fallen from Grace.
Yeah. And the understanding of falling from grace, that it was not doing something so bad that God rejected you, but falling from grace was thinking that a law, obedience to a law, could help you with God. Well, that just absolutely flew in the face of every concept of what I was in, which was the charismatic Word of Faith movement. And I remember one church out in Tulsa. This guy was a former board of directors for Kenneth Hagin Ministries, had a large church there, a very large church. And I remember, and in fact, the name of it was Grace Fellowship or something like that. So I remember saying that that the promises of God do not come to someone's life because of obedience to anything, that it's all based on the grace of God, that it is not by what we've done. Well, that just threw a wrench in his entire operation. And I was called on the carpet, and he did have a conversation with me about it. And then he told me it was absolutely nothing, that our disagreement was no big deal. I volunteered to duck out. I'd already been kicked out of some churches. And he said, "Oh, no. He said, this is not a big thing." And I said, "Believe me," I said, "you're the pastor. I've pastored a church, and I will defer to you. And I will let them know." And he acknowledged, he appreciated that. So I got up and I told them that regardless of what I had taught, that I respected the position of pastor. And if they had anything that I had spoken about that was creating any consternation between what I said and what their pastor said, I said, "I defer to your pastor, and you should defer to your pastor also." And so he was all smiles and warmth, and people were very gracious and kind. We still have gospel revolutionaries out of that group of people.
Was that Grace Church in Broken Arrow?
Yes, it was.
That was, 14 years ago. That would be 10 years after you were there. The thing was rocked by a sex scandal. And I see that they're now selling the whole 77-acre property.
Wow, I did not know that. Man. Boy, the follow-up on some of these stories that where they so resoundingly rejected the gospel, that now not only did these folks, the pastor, reject the gospel, they began to extricate all of my material. They had a full bookstore inside the building.
Book burning, tape destroying.
Boy, they did. They went in and removed everything that had my name on it and took it out. And we stood in the aisle. I remember the pastor standing there with me and just was so heartwarming and friendly, and told me, he said, "Mike," he said, "this has been nothing at all." He said, "Your words were perfectly adequate for the situation." And he said, he shook my hand and looked me right in the eye, and he said, "And I will have you back again."
He shook your hand and looked in your eyes and lied to your face.
And he lied to my face. And they were one of the churches that joined in on this great big explosion that was happening. He joined with Marilyn Hickey, who was on international television speaking about me for several weeks, and accusations that just weren't true. I always said, you know, it's really funny dealing with these folks, because there were things that were true that I would not have been able to say, "No, that's not true." But everything they came up with was just an outright, utter lie. It was unbelievable. And really went on a very vicious campaign against me at the time. So,
well, shall we get started on Galatians chapter 6?
Let's do it, because this is the chapter that has changed a lot of people's minds and hearts about the subject of grace. And I think we are all the way down to the last chapter. I don't know how many weeks we've been on this, but
about 2 months.
It has deserved every moment of time that we've spent here, for sure.
Okay. Now, I'm going to read this first in the King Jimmy, because I want you to see how remarkably different the original text is from what this is saying. I'll read this verse, and then you will all know exactly how you were taught this verse, and I will tell you how I was taught this verse. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual, restore such an one to the spirit of meekness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Now, this was taught to me, and I taught it to others, as, let's say, there is a somebody and they're having it off with their neighbor's wife. And she's a hot, hot, I mean, she's just a big old hottie. And you go to counsel that person. You yourself, you know, might fall into the sin of sexual addiction or something else. You might be, in your own mind, committing lust if you get to be around that woman too much, or even any other woman for that matter. So you who are spiritual, and of course aren't we all more spiritual than each other? That's what religion does. Mm-hmm. That's what legalism does. That's what the law does.
Especially those people that think about sex. I mean, goodness gracious.
Oh, man. Leave drugs and rock and roll out of it. Sex is just a yeah. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering yourself, that you also, lest thou also be tempted. Now, I'm going to read this in the Mirror translation. And you will be rather surprised at the differences. Brethren, if it seems that someone continues to anticipate their next failure, from your position in faith, restore such a person in a spirit of courtesy and grace, keeping your own attitude in check. A legalistic approach would want to suspiciously probe into problems. Now, I'm going to say another thing here, which anyone who's an acting pastor, right as I say these things, is going to deny it. But I've been in this situation where people have counseled with me. And I have to tell you that even in the nicest of us, there is a little bit of voyeurism, and there is something titillating and scintillating in hearing people confess their sins. I don't think it's right, and there are many lovely people out there, but I defy anybody who is coming at this thing from a position of law and legalism to not be just ever so slightly titillated by other people's failures. Now, having said that, I want to read this in the Greek to you just to show you how different, how utterly wrong this has become. If I transliterate it, it goes, brothers, if a man should be precipitated also in some offense, you who are spiritual, be attuning such a one, or tuning up such a one, in a spirit of meekness, noting yourself that you also may not be tried. Now, that's what the Greek says. But I want to really, Michael, would you go to Strong's Concordance?
Yes.
And tell me what that Greek word is for overtaken.
Let's see. We've got prolambano.
Prolambano. Now, that comes from a couple of different roots. Lambano is a Greek word that simply means to receive something, to take something, to lift up a plate in your hand, you lambano it. If I take a something from off the shelf in Kroger's supermarket and I put it in my basket, I have lambanoed it. I've taken it. Now, you'll notice pro.
Mm-hmm.
Prolambano. Pro does not mean over. Protos, this word does not mean overtaken in a fault. This means, Francois Dutoit got it so right. He said, if you are precipitated, or if you precipitate yourself in a sin or in a fault. The word means to presume ahead of time, pro, ahead of, lambano, to take. If you take ahead of time the possibility that you can sin, that is your fault. Now, the only way you can presume that you can sin is if you hold to the law. So I want to read this verse through again. You're very quiet there, Michael. This hit me like a sideboard through the side of a head. Brethren, if a man should be expecting to sin ahead of time, you who are spiritual, be tuning such a one into a spirit of meekness, noting yourself that you also may not be tried. What he's saying is this. If you see somebody around and they're always afraid they're going to fall into sin, then they're living out of the law. Now, you are just as vulnerable as they are. So when you straighten them out, and when you say to these people, listen, there is no law, you cannot sin. There is no possibility of you sinning. There is no possibility of you doing anything that will ever come between you and God again in your lifetime. Forget this circumcision thing. It's not gonna come between you and God. How do you like them apples?
That's an interesting view.
Well, given the word pro lambano, I don't see any other view to take. And incidentally, as I said, our friend in the Mirror Version says this, brothers, if it seems that somebody continues to anticipate their next failure, he has it spot on by carrying just too much load. From your position in faith, restore such a person in a spirit of courtesy and grace. Now, if somebody continues to anticipate their next failure, they're not living in grace.
Mm-hmm.
How can they be? So you restore such a person. In other words, you just bring those people back to center, because it's so easy to go off, you know, into the left ditch or the right ditch on this whole thing. From your position in faith, restore such a person in a spirit of courtesy and grace, keeping your own attitude in check, because you might fall into the same trap.
Mm-hmm. Interesting perspective.
Okay, give us your teaching on it, mate.
Well, let's look at it contextually. What has been the fault throughout Galatians? Why do we read the word fault and think sin? What is the fault? What is it that others were tempted to do and did in the book of Galatians? The fault here is not doing something wrong or counting something as sin when it's not sin. The issue is, if any man be overtaken in a fault. Now, we've just finished the last chapter, chapter 5, and we've gone through this great description about the difference between walking in the flesh and in the spirit. Chapter 5, stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ has made us free. So the fault that we're talking about is going back under the law. The fault that was in this book was being circumcised. And the thing that they, in the process of correcting that person, were tempted to be done also, as happened to the Galatians, was to be circumcised, not to desire your neighbor's wife or do the thing he did. What was the thing that was being addressed? The faultiness of the book of Galatians is not a sin. The faultiness that is spoken about in the book of Galatians is falling from grace, which indeed this verse brings out. And the position of faith that he's drawing them back to is drawing them back out from under the law. I think that it is borne out as we go on down. We'll skip verse 2 just to get to where I think that this kind of wraps this up, Don. He says, for if any man think himself to be something, so the fault is thinking is at least exaggerated by him thinking that he is something when he is nothing. So how do you fall into a fault? You begin to think that there's a law that you can keep that will make you right with God. You that are spiritual, what is a spiritual person in the book of Galatians? Is a spiritual person in the book of Galatians one who does not have any faults in their life as far as morality? That's not what's been addressed at all in this book of Galatians.
Well, that word fault is another really bad translation.
Yes.
The word fault in the Greek means you slipped or you took.
They absolutely did.
A side, you lapsed to one side. It was a lapse. It's not. The word is not fault in Greek. It's not offense, as some translations have it. It is a lapse.
Yes.
And the only lapse that I'm aware of, which is why I read this verse this way, is you lapse back under the law.
Yes, exactly. That's what the lapse is. That's what the fault is. The fault is that somebody is, and if we stick strictly with the number one thing, the one law that Paul has addressed throughout the book of Galatians, we know you can put any law in there, but if the issue for this church at Galatia was that they had been, now Paul taught the gospel to the Galatians, but then remember the concision came in and those representing and possibly, we know James wasn't there. He never left Jerusalem, but others came in tempting them. Now we know that some people at this church really succumbed to the issue of circumcision.
Most people who argue what I'm about to say that these people didn't come from James, but it makes it very clear in the first and second chapters of this
absolutely.
Book, these people
yes.
were sent from James.
Yeah.
I just wanted to throw that in because there are a lot of people say, oh, no, James didn't send these people. Yeah, really? Well,
yeah.
Did Paul lie in this book of Galatians? Is your Bible apparently not inerrant? You've got to read this for what it says.
Yeah. Instead of putting on those filters that tell you that all these guys agree, that's the only thing you've got to give up for just a moment, and it's there.
And the other thing interesting right here, Michael, is that you touched on the fact that if you think you're something, that's exactly what he said about the people who came down from James.
Exactly.
He said they seemed to be pillars, but and they seemed to be something. Yeah. This is a wonderful, wonderful mm-hmm. little bit of sarcasm by Paul.
I think that it is also, and Paul's not switching gears here now to deal with, any other fault other than going back under the law. If you see a man. So let's put ourselves at the church of Galatia. Now, if you see somebody who has been overtaken in a fault, let's deal with the fault that's been dealt with throughout this book, circumcision. What are you going to do with somebody who's been circumcised, who now thinks that his circumcision is his qualifying of salvation? You need to restore that man. You need to restore him to what? Well, you can't restore him back to uncircumcision, but you can restore his faith. You can restore him back to the faith. It is not, okay, brother, we know that these guys came in and there were several of us guys who decided that we would be circumcised but we're at fault. We have swerved off the path here.
We have lapsed.
We have lapsed. And now that all of this is done, as painful as it was, it means nothing. Now, that had to be even more painful than the actual circumcision that these people went through.
I reckon. I mean, the waking up for that. Wow.
So now they're having to come to grips with the fact they went through this torturous exercise for an adult man. And they've literally just...
Can I just underline that by saying no anesthetic?
Yeah. It had to be very excruciating. But see, here's the thing: when we think that there is something that we need to do, especially a painful thing that needs to be done to be right with God, people will do it, Don.
Oh, they will, because when we were kids. But I don't like that medicine; it hurts. Oh, that means it's doing you good. I mean, this is a very human kind of a response. Well, it must mean it's the worse it hurts, must be the better it's doing you good.
Well, and we've got people inflicting pain on themselves, the two tragic stories, one tragedy and one tragic story that ended very well and one that did not end well, I spoke of last year. Last week. I do not know why I said year.
Mate, my brain is jelly today, and maybe we're both overtaken in the same bloody fault.
So here are these guys, goodness gracious, but folks, you see what we're doing in the gospel revolution is we have found brethren and cisterns too.
Cisterns, no less. Cisterns.
There are brothers and sisters both that are overtaken in a fault. Now, that fault is thinking it's their faith, their obedience, their righteousness. And what are we doing? We that are spiritual, why are we spiritual? Because we do not walk after the flesh, because we do not claim righteousness through our deeds. The only thing that makes one person spiritual and another person not, it has nothing to do with whether or not they smoke or drink or cuss. It has to do with whether or not these deeds or any other deeds that are positive or negative, whether or not they are qualifiers and disqualifiers to the righteousness of God that was bestowed upon the human race through the faith of Christ.
Well, that's
and the work of the cross.
That's an interesting interpretation. No, you see, we cannot escape the fact that this verse actually says anticipating a sideways lapse. We can't escape it. That's what the Greek says. If you find somebody who's anticipating a sideways lapse, well,
they're considering going back under the law.
Every time.
Yeah.
According to this book. Should we move on?
Let us.
You mentioned food like that, it makes me hungry. I'm going to stay in the Mirror translation. And I'm going to read what Francois du Toit said here. He said, the word prolambano means to anticipate, take in advance. Paraptoma comes from the para. Close proximity proceeding from a sphere of influence and...
From a sphere of influence. I love that.
And pipto means to lose height, to stop flying.
Wow.
To stop flying, fail. I'm having problems reading today, family, because my eyesight is just not my best friend today. Remember, you represent grace, not law.
Wow.
Now, there's some interesting stuff.
Wow. Absolutely. See, that tells us what the fault was. We don't believe grace so much that we're able to keep the law. And that's where that with Francois' translation of this first verse is a presumption that a fault is doing something wrong. At least it sounds that way to me. The fault is clear. But the thing that is that we cannot do is suddenly think that this fault has to do with a man wanting his neighbor, and us
which,
going.
Which is
and,
what we were always taught in Christianity.
That's exactly what we were taught, that this is never any other way other than, you know, a fault is that you have sinned and we're here to restore you, brother.
And if you're overtaken in it, I mean, you're not just thinking about it. You are. You're damaged goods.
Yes, you are indeed. And not only are you damaged goods, but by talking to the guy who has fallen into pornography, who's smoking, who is, you know, whatever the legalistic view of this word fault is, that we're actually going, just by being around this guy, that, we're real close to the edge here.
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm telling you, I'm counseling this brother and he smokes and I'm telling you, sitting there is wanting a cigarette so bad, but I'm going to be strong. Well, folks, that's not what this is talking about. This is talking about the guy thinks himself to be something because he has done something right, not because he's done something wrong. You see, when we hear the word fault, we think about doing something wrong. This fault is doing something right, or at least perceived to be right.
Now, further down in this chapter, Paul says, look, remember this, we all have to live our own lives.
Yes.
So, and as I was reading through this chapter earlier, I thought, you know, that might be a key verse for this whole chapter. But we're just going to keep going. The law of the Christ life.
Yeah.
Distinguishes your spirituality, taking the weight of someone's shoulders is fulfilling the law of Christ. Now, he's referring back to, and then he adds, the message of grace removes all law-related burdens such as guilt, suspicion, inferiority, shame, and a sin consciousness.
Yeah.
Now,
that's perfect. I couldn't possibly do it better. Yeah.
So what he's saying is, when you are gently correcting this person, or when you're gently bringing this person back to center from his sideways lapse, the law of the Christ life distinguishes your spirituality taking the weight off someone's shoulders. You want to be spiritual? Take the weight off somebody's shoulders.
Yeah.
That is fulfilling the law of Christ.
Help get that law off of their lives.
Yeah.
Folks, everyone in the Gospel Revolution, this is talking about what you do and are doing and have done. You are constantly addressing people about this burden that is upon their shoulders. This is how we express Christ in us. We don't go around telling people to stop, smoking and drinking and going to the bars. That's not what we are out to exhort people to do. We're out to exhort people to stop feeling guilt of those things. First off, you will never have power over your life until you stop feeling guilty about who and what you are and what you do. You will never have power over your own life as long as guilt is the motivating factor for you to alter course. You will alter course, and you will alter course today. You'll alter course tomorrow and the next day. And for the next 60 years of your life, you will be altering course. And
now, when you're yachting, sometimes you'll take a straight line with the wind at your back. Other times, when the wind's off to one side, you do what's called tacking. And tacking is a zigzagging way that you actually get the wind in your sails and move. And so you move with the wind and cross the wind and so forth. It's called tacking. I don't want to live the rest of my life tacking. I just want the wind at my back, and I just want to be able to get out there and just feel free like a bird.
Yeah, and the only way to do that is to get out from under the law. This is not, we've not switched again to, after five full chapters, we're not switching back to talking about how to stay out of the faults of breaking God's law. We're still talking about the fault of keeping God's law. That is just such a difficult concept for the human race to grasp hold of, that even here in the book of Galatians, as Don said, when we read this word fault, we meant breaking God's law. How in the world, even those of us, when we read this, it's so easy to see the word fault, and fault means breaking God's law. We have dealt with a fault all the way through Galatians. We have dealt with the fault promoters, the fault agitators. You know, the ones that think the fault is the way to do things. And we've experienced people who have fallen to this fault. And Paul says that that is what you call a fall from grace. This fault is a fall from grace. We've anticipated that falling from grace meant doing something wrong, breaking one of God's laws. When Paul himself explains, falling from grace is not when you break a law, it's when you keep a law and you add it to your repertoire of righteousness. This is why I am better than you. Now, so when we start addressing people about the fault in their life, this is still the same subject. We're still doing the very same thing. Now, how are you moving along and taking the burden off of somebody? How do you do that? By doing exactly what you guys do in the Gospel Revolution. You never waver. As Don has told you, like with the full wind at your back, you will take somebody who feels guilty about what they're doing, and you're not going to address the issue with them. You're going to address the guilt that they feel.
You're not going to be part of the problem. You're going to be part of the solution.
Yeah, and thank God for that, that there's at least a few people on earth that can be a part of the solution. You see, when we see people who are doing one of two things, I used to call it the opposite ends of one dirty stick, whether or not they are feeling boastful because they think they're doing right, or they're feeling guilty because they think they've done wrong, or let's keep it in context. They're feeling really righteous because they've kept God's law, or they feel really guilty because they've broken one of God's law. You see, both ends of that stick are the opposite ends of the same dirty stick. It's called self-righteousness. Guilt is self-righteousness. Feeling guilty before God. Now, here's the concept, Don, that I think you and I both have tried so hard to get across to people, and it is mind-boggling. It has been more than a decade now, more than one decade. Probably quite a bit more than one decade, but I know for sure one decade, because as we were talking about, you know, for me, the year 2000 was just last year. So, so we lose track of time, but I know it's been over a decade since I've had the sensation of guilt in my life. I never feel guilty. Never feel that sensation, Don.
Well, what's that make me? You know, I used to do things that were wrong, quote unquote, but I never felt guilty anyway. What's that make me? Some kind of, am I a sociopath or something?
Well, that's what they describe.
Oh, boy.
Now, and you know, they do describe, it's amazing how that even our understanding of psychology is so absent of the gospel. It's so designed around Christianity. Modern day psychology is melded in lockstep with Christianity.
Which to this shame, point. Shame, guilt, and so
absolutely.
Forth.
It's still all the same thing, although they say that it is not. Yet it is diagnosable that if you don't feel guilt because of what you do, it is one of the first signs of a psychopath.
So the absence of guilt, I mean, and you can't, I mean, so they have to bring guilt into it somehow.
They've got to. Because you see, they're trying, what modern day psychology is trying to do, and psychiatry, is work with the norms that are here. You see, they have no clue about the gospel. that there is a powerful and life-giving way to get out from under guilt. You see, they're used to dealing with a group that has a guilty conscience because of religion. Now, and it is true, you show me any good Christian who has not heard the gospel yet feels no guilt, you will probably have a psychopath on your hands.
Because I always wanted a title. I always wanted to know what I was. Now I know what I was.
These are things really that we do have to look at. And I remember after I first started declaring this fact that I do not experience guilt anymore, and then, of course, realizing at the same time that that is a diagnosable condition in psychiatry and psychology of being a psychopath. But see, that diagnosis is for a sick generation, a sick bunch of puppies who they cannot even perceive the possibility of not feeling guilt, not because you are so burnt out on laws and rules and regulations, but because you are freed from laws, rules, and regulations. Folks, the very thing that we have, that's why people in religion become psychopaths. That's why they become there. But why? Because they're looking for a place to where that they don't feel guilt. You can only feel it so much until you finally just say, I don't give a damn.
Well, you know, we had abortionists here in this country, and we have a pretty big lobby anti-abortion and also pro-abortion. I've always wondered about those false equivalencies, Michael. If it's pro-life, shouldn't it be anti-life? But anyway, that's another story. We had instances of Christians going out and shooting people who worked at abortion clinics. Now, what kind of absence of bloody guilt is that?
Yeah, for sure.
How do you factor that? If you take and that guy that did that, by the way, he was a sincere Christian. He was not an insincere Christian. The insincere Christians just don't give a rap. But he cared, and he just thought that these people were murdering babies, and so he went out to take
justifies murder.
That's so guilt. You know, Christianity is a shame-based behavior modification system. That's all it will ever be. It cannot be anything else but that, because you have to join a tribe. You've got to agree with their mental. You've got to agree with their belief statement. If you don't agree with their belief statement, you're out of the tribe. You lose your friends. You lose your families in some cases with disfellowshipping. The whole thing is a shame-based behavior modification system. What do you think makes young Amish men behave the way they do? What do you think makes good Southern Baptists recoil in horror from the thought of mixed bathing or dancing, which a lot of them do? What it is a guilt and shame-based behavior modification system. Thank Christ that he came not to modify our behavior, but to free us to behave any way we want without feeling of guilt and shame before our Creator.
Yes.
Dear heavens.
And empower you. To empower you to live your life in the most productive way that you see fit.
Yes, we are not saying today, live as you like. We're not saying that. Are we, Mike?
Well, actually, we are.
Well, I'm saying, you know, as a psychopath or as a child murderer or a rapist or something.
No.
We're not saying that.
No, not at all.
You know, one of the first things that people say to us is, so you're saying that I can go out and rape and steal and murder as much as I like? Is that not one of the first questions we get?
Yeah, which is right out of a psychopath's mouth.
Oh, hey. Well, now, Mike, are you getting all the raping you want?
Every ounce that I want.
Have you got all the murder and
It seems to be completely satiated now.
Wow. There you go, family.
So
he used to be a murdering rapist, but not anymore. No, it's all fixed up now.
Oh, man.
But that's the truth. That is the absolute truth. What a crazy thing to come out of anyone's mouth. And yes, we're getting all the raping we want, which is exactly zero.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to sit on this point for a moment, Don, but I think it's just so vitally important. We've got to return to the default understanding of the gospel. You were born into this earth. You were conceived in absolute perfection, righteousness, and holiness. That's the gospel default.
Now, how does that compare with the Christian default? You were born a worm, a sinner. You were born in sin. You will never, ever deviate that far away from sin. You can't ever be perfect. You can't ever be righteous, because if you are, well, in 10 minutes' time, you'll be a sinner again.
Which is exactly, Don, where the contradiction rages in the soul of everyone who embraces Christianity or any other doctrine that says that you're born a sinner. So you have this thing called freedom that was born inside of you. It is part of your DNA, if you will. It is a part of you. You cannot escape this, and we've watched it drive people in so many different directions. And you can see it, whether it's people who have that freedom encouraged or discouraged, encourage it or discourage it. You cannot get away from this default that is there of freedom. Now, you then are raised under these laws and rules and regulations, whether it's Mormonism, it doesn't make any difference what brand or breed that it is, Catholicism, Hinduism, it doesn't make any difference what is setting the standards for spirituality or for freedom, I should say. You are already free. We discussed this in detail last week. You're already free. You can't get freer. You are free. And you came here in this condition of freedom. Now, what begins to happen is like a pressure cooker, Don, because these things are not compatible to each other. Your condition, if we are right, that you were born righteous and holy. Just think of the battle then that is a part of living on this planet. Now, we develop teachings about how to win this battle, how to war this warfare. Psychiatrists even have a diagnosable condition. Once you have gone through it so much, you're so worn out, you're not even affected by guilt. Even though you're still under the law, you're still not affected by guilt. They do know that a person who is under those rules and yet feels no guilt, something has deviated. Something has gone wrong in the brain. And they want to do things outside the law just to prove they don't feel guilt. But you see, when you understand the gospel, you've gained a knowledge that is concurrent and congruent and fits perfectly like a hand in a glove with the condition in which you were born. So you don't have to try to prove anything. You don't have to try to prove you're free by breaking a law. You don't have to try to prove anything to anybody. I told you about the friend in Houston who was in that situation, and this took his life from him, folks. This is a serious topic that we're on. He could not see himself as righteous and holy without testing the boundaries. He couldn't just take the truth of the matter. And he actually challenged me to go out and get drunk with him and then rebuked me. He thought I was in fault because I would not go out and get drunk with him. It wasn't that I wasn't free to go do it. I didn't want to. It wasn't something I enjoyed doing at all.
Why didn't you did you have my phone number at the time? Why didn't you call me up? I'd have filled in.
Well, we could probably had a lot of people fill in. But see, folks, this is this is where the struggle is. We're not trying to teach you how to fight against your basic nature. We are teaching you to be conformed to your basic nature. It just so happens that we understand your basic nature is righteous. It's holy. It's perfect. And that's why we put this suit, this tailor-made suit, put on this suit, put on this righteousness. Why? Because it fits the body of righteousness.
It's the exact opposite of the emperor has no clothes.
Mm-hmm.
You and I are fully clothed before God. We don't stand naked in his presence. Yep. Remember, we were all taught in Christianity, one day you're going to stand naked before God. Well, you're never going to stand naked before. I mean, do you think there is anything about you God doesn't know? No, when the Bible talks about robes of righteousness, guess what? Yeah. That's your new clothes.
Yeah, exactly.
Only religion can strip you bare and stand you up for ridicule. Only religion can do that.
Well, and see, robes of righteousness in Christianity is an attempt to cover up the faultiness.
Oh, folks. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. We do not put on a robe of righteousness as a cloak of deceit. This robe of righteousness fits, folks. The robe of righteousness of Christ. Paul said that we don't seek to be unclothed, but we seek that we might be clothed. And then he goes on to say, we've already been clothed. You're waiting to be clothed after you die. But you've missed the new creation, and you've missed his new clothes too.
Mm.
You don't even know that you're a new creation, much less the clothes that come with it. And this is a robe of righteousness. This is not a cloak of shame. But, you know, when Christianity tries to put on the robe of righteousness, it turns out to be a cloak of deceit.
Now, I want to take that into this next verse, chapter 6 of Galatians, verse 3. Anyone who imagines to be someone they are not lives a lie.
Yeah.
Now, there's a sword with two edges.
Boy, isn't that the truth?
Isn't it? Here is a man saying, you think you're someone, you're not, you're a liar.
Yep.
Well, you know, if you don't think yourself as holy, righteous, and perfect, you're also a liar.
Boy, and as we've seen this two-edged sword all the way through this teaching on this, Don, and it's thank you very much for pointing that out. Because, see, we are so geared in our religious thinking to see only the negative side of anything, because it's still sinking in on us. Even those of you that have been with the Gospel Revolution, including myself, for all of these years, it's still sinking in on us. We really are righteous and holy and perfect, and we are the dwelling place of God. We've already been clothed upon with Christ. We are the body of Christ. The Christian community is going around waiting until after they die to get a new, brand new body. Well, you've already got that new body. You are the body of Christ. What newer model do you want than being the body of Christ? We are robbing people constantly of the wonderful now and now by putting it off into the dirty future somehow, that somehow in the future we're going to get cleansed.
In other words, you can have steak on your plate while you wait and not have to wait for pie in the sky when you die.
So we, yes, don't deceive yourself, because the truth about who you are and why you are the way you are is forever sealed, regardless of where you are. You see, in sin, folks, there was no hope of them being nothing but sinners, regardless of how many laws they kept. They could not change the functional hardware of the imputation of sin. They could not change that, regardless of how well they tried to keep the law. Now the very same truth exists. You can't change the inward hardware that you are righteous and holy and perfect, regardless. And it is a fault to think of yourself otherwise and turn to a law to try to make up for that sense of faultiness or guiltiness that you feel inside.
You're getting worked up, buddy. Settle, pedal.
No.
Okay.
Come on, take us on.
Verse 4, I think we'll go up to verse 5 at least. Verse 4, and I'm reading out of the Mirror Bible. Now without the pretense, now without the pressure of pretense. Do you know how pressured I was to pretend in Christianity?
Oh, gosh.
Now without the pressure of pretense, you are free to live you are free to give expression to your individual self and not some phony life you're trying to fake. You know what? Now you can do what Paul said, rest.
Yeah.
When you've done everything else, just rest. Why don't we labor to enter into his rest, he says in Hebrews. If you want to work, work to enter into his rest. You're free to give. And how do you do that? Just be. Just be. Just observe yourself. Become the observer of the change that the grace is doing to you. You are free to give expression to your individual self and not to some phony life you are trying to fake. Now, if that's not religion, I don't know what is. Evaluate your own conduct. Now, this is being the observer, as Mike Williams has taught for years now. Evaluate your own conduct in such a way that you do not need another's approval to confirm your joy. Now, Francois, I don't know where you got this from. This is magic. I'm just going to keep reading the next verse, mate.
No, let's stop right there.
well, the next verse actually ties this up. Can I do that?
You can do that. Go ahead.
Okay. Everyone ultimately lives his own life.
Yeah. And this is, now, I want you to remember what Paul is addressing here. How were people using other people to affirm themselves? According to Galatians chapter 1 through chapter 5. They were wanting them to be circumcised that it might affect them, right?
Mate, exactly what Paul said. It didn't serve the people being circumcised. It served the people who wanted to force them to become circumcised. And it reminds me again of the words of James to Paul in Jerusalem Council when Paul said, oh, man, so many thousands of people have come to the gospel. Yeah. And James says, oh, yes, but look how many Jews we have brought to the gospel. I mean, it made him look good.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what Paul is addressing here, that you might have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. Because that's what Peter, James, and John were trying to do.
Just stop talking, will you?
Yeah.
I got the big red button. I just want you to start at that beginning again. That is, just say that again.
And then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another.
Wow.
Yeah. Now tie this together. Stay in context. How were they rejoicing in another? By getting them to be circumcised. That's how they were living out their self-righteousness, was by compelling others to do what they were doing. He says, you do your own work. He says, if you want to rejoice about what you're doing, don't do something because somebody else has told you to do it. Do it out of your own heart.
And you know how Jesus described that? He said, you foul, you go across the ocean to make a convert, and when you do, you make them twice the son of the devil that you are. Holy dooly.
Yeah. Now, let me show you just by skipping ahead here. I'm going to cheat. I've got a cheat sheet here.
Oh.
So now, let's stay with verse 4, and now to show you that the context before and after this affirms that chapter 6, verse 1 through 4 is talking about the same thing we've talked about in chapter 1 through 5. It hasn't started talking about the fault of breaking a law. We're still talking about the fault of keeping a law and misperceiving that it gains you something with God. Now, Don, read verse 12. We're going to jump ahead in verse 12. Just right straight out of verse 4. Sometimes this helps if you get the wordiness out from between some of the verses. because we've been so told what these verses mean, sometimes it does help to jump forward just to see where are we still when we're talking about this. Now, we've just completed verse 4, and he's talked about the very same thing that he's talked about in 1 through 5. Don't let them compel you to be circumcised, because they do this so that they may rejoice in your flesh. Now read verse 12.
I'm reading from the New King James. As many as desire to make a good showing in the flesh, these would compel you to be circumcised, only that they may not suffer persecution for the cross of Christ. What the?
Yeah.
What the? I'm going to read it again. As many, can I read that in another version?
You can. In fact, read verse 12 and 13. We'll cheat two verses.
Okay. For not even those who are circumcised keep the law.
Yeah.
But they desire to have you circumcised that they may boast in your flesh.
Yeah.
Oh my God. How did I never see these? Okay, I'm just going to go to.
Now continue in 12 and 13.
Didn't I just read that?
Yeah, but you've just read this again. Let's read 12 and 13 again.
As many as desire to make a good showing in the flesh, these would compel you to be circumcised, only that they may not suffer persecution for the cross of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
For not even those who are circumcised keep the law, but they desire to have you circumcised that they may boast in your flesh.
All right. Now that is a slam dunk as to what we were talking about in chapter 1, verse 1 through verse 4. This is the fault, folks. Don't slip off to the other side of the ditch in the fault of that this is talking about some sin or breaking of God's law. This is the fault of keeping God's law with this horrible misperception. Because even those that do get circumcised, and they are circumcised, they don't keep the law anyway.
Yeah.
But they want to glory in your flesh. They want to say, see, you now do what we did to become righteous. You know that is exactly what labels and is over the door of every denomination of Christianity around the planet. Why do you walk in those doors and not the Jehovah's Witness Hall? Why do you walk in those doors and not Mormon Tabernacle? Why do you walk in those doors and not the Baptist Church? Because these have convinced you to be twice the child of hell as they are, because they've convinced you to do whatever it is they do. Now they glory in your flesh. Oh, man. Do you know why you're a Mormon?
I'm not a moron, and stop calling me names.
You know why you're a Mormon? You're a Mormon because somebody convinced you to become one so they could glory in your flesh. You know why you're any of these denominations? Because somebody converted you to do what they do and don't do what they do, that they may glory in your flesh, whether it is circumcision or abstinence from alcohol or divorce, or whatever it is that the legalistic structure, which all of these have had to evolve with time, because as society changes, these rules cut in on the money. Because if you cut out every divorced person out of church right now, do you know people used to have to leave church because they were divorced? That's the way it was. You were outside the fellowship if you divorced.
And it wasn't that long back either. Divorce was one of the only sins that Jesus never died for, apparently.
Depending on which group you're in, it's either divorce or something else.
Yep.
All right. So pardon me for reaching into your brain, folks, today. But that's really what Don and I have done. We've reached into your brain and we've kind of rearranged some things. And now it's up to you to decide whether or not this is actually saying, as it states clearly, what it has to say.
You know, in verse 12, they're trying to escape persecution for the cross of Christ.
Yes.
She.
Well, remember Paul said, you know, if I yet preach circumcision, why am I still persecuted? Yeah.
Yeah. This is, I'm writing a new book, Michael.
Yeah.
Yep. A book on the early church and how it evolved.
Oh, and, marvelous.
So far I've got all the pages numbered. You know, there are multiple examples. I mean, there are hundreds of examples. I'm going to go out and say hundreds of examples that you're going to find in all of Paul's writings and James, Peter, and John's to show without any question of doubt that there was such a schism between the two sides that you would have to, I mean, we had to be educated by Christianity not to see them.
Yeah.
And as I am now writing this book, I'm finding that there are little verses here like this. Those who urge you to be circumcised are only trying to avoid persecution for the cross of Christ. That goes straight back. I mean,
that's so amazing.
What an incredible statement he makes. They prefer to be popular with their fellow Jewish colleagues. Now, let's say he's talking directly about James. Now, think about this. Verse 12, those who urge you to be circumcised, James is only trying to avoid persecution for the cross of Christ.
Wow.
Now, he did that for quite a few years until the Jews wanted him to say that Christ, Jesus was not the Messiah, and he refused to do it, and they threw him off the top of the temple. I think they ran him through with a sword after that, just to make sure that he wasn't getting back up again. James prefers to be popular with his fellow Jewish colleagues and thus compromise the message of the cross.
Yeah.
To James, it is only the outward side sign in the flesh that matters.
Yeah.
It is not even so much for the law that James is concerned. They just want to boast in your flesh as a sign that James successfully recruited you for their cause. Oh, my God. There are so many, and there are just little things. And if you've read this from a church perspective all your life, you miss them. I just said to Mike this morning before we started, I have seen something in this in verse 1 and 2 that I've misquoted, misread, yeah, misunderstood my whole life. And maybe this is the first time in my life today that we're recording this that I've actually seen some of this stuff.
Yeah.
In fact, I know it is.
Well, it's one of those places where that, like I say, that the entire world agrees. See, we don't realize how much everyday people don't realize how much they agree with Christianity. Even atheists agree with Christianity. But I'm telling you, there is the power of the gospel, folks. The gospel is the power of God. Now, people that are atheists do have a leg up on Christians. I will tell you that straight and openly. They have a leg up on Christians in that they don't have to be under the rules to be able to escape hell. They don't face, they should not be facing any threat of hell or punishment. They should not be living in any reward system or punishment system at all. But I'll guarantee you that the ones who say they don't believe in God, there's many of them that believe in karma, which is just the very same thing. So while you can have a leg up by being an atheist away from Christianity, you're still missing the power of the gospel. You're missing the power of God. Which is a revelation of righteousness, that it's the gospel. The gospel is the power of God. And Paul says in Romans 1 that it's a revelation of righteousness.
More than that, it's a revelation of your righteousness.
Yes, it is indeed. So we hound on this. Yes, I get excited. Yes, we record even when my voice is half gone. Don does too. But folks, these things are so vitally important that we really want to keep us on track. Do you see how foolish it is to take chapter 1 through 5 and then look over here at chapter 6, verse 12, and then try to make 1 through 11 about a person who's doing something wrong? And that wrong is not anything other than the wrong being addressed by the entire book of Galatians, the wrong of replacing the grace of God with any single law whatsoever. Wow. There is a way to be free from guilt without being a psychopath. It's called truth. It is called knowing the truth, understanding who you are. And that is not, it is not a freedom from guilt that makes you want to prove you can do whatever you want, just like my friend in Houston did, trying to prove a point by doing something heinous to other people or whatever. It is a understanding of righteousness that causes you to want to live out who you are and have rejoicing in yourself and not in another.
Now, without the pressure of pretense, you are free to give expression to your individual self and not some phony life you're trying to fake.
Oh, thank God.
Wow.
Yes, thank God. Oh, I love that one. Love it, feel it, live it. You know, and this verse really does concur with statement that I've been saying about Christianity for a long time now, that to be a really good Christian, you've got to be a good liar.
And of course, the longer you're in it, the more practiced you become.
Yes, and it becomes easier and easier all the time. Folks, you know, the gospel is wonderful. This is what walking in the Spirit is all about. This is what being spiritual is. Being spiritual is acknowledging the grace of God and refusing to measure yourself by any law or measure somebody else by any law. You don't need to start a new church now, because now we measure righteousness by this, not that. You know, we do it this way, not that way. We meet on Saturday, not Sunday. My God, the different ways that people come up with, and it's really uncanny how just one human being can come up with his own form of righteousness and then goes out and can so easily recruit many thousands of others to be righteous the way they are righteous. And start a whole new denomination. That is the root, the very roots of religion and denominationalism in the world today.
Go
ahead.
I want to look at a practical example of that, and I don't want to suggest that any one Christian group is any better or worse than any other. Just let me preface my words with that. But there were some perfectly wonderful fellowships of people who helped each other raise barns, helped each other, made pies for each other, helped each other when they were sick, helped each other when they couldn't plow their fields and they went over and plowed their fields. There was a general niceness in the frontier people of the USA. Now, generally is the same in most countries, same in Australia. And you had Baptists and Methodists and Presbyterians, and none of them were wanting to cut each other's throats. They all got on in peace and harmony. And then we found a church come along called the Church of Christ. Now, the Church of Christ in America is a church that started with actually some charismatics, to be honest. Alexander Campbell, I think it was, who used to just do a Benny Hinn and wave his coat and people would just fall down. Some very unusual circumstances. But they evolved into a group that said, if you don't worship like us, you're going to go to hell. Pure and simple. Now, you just think about that Where is the unity that brings?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's going to bring division every single time. It's going to bring division. We don't have music, and if you have music, you're from the devil. We don't have musical instruments. We just sing without music. Now, I was raised in a church exactly like that, so I know what I'm talking about. That means we're holier than you because we're doing it righter than you. We're doing it gooder than you. We're doing it much better than you. And we measure our self-righteousness by your alleged sin.
Mm-hmm.
But what this chapter is saying is, hey, listen, we all have to live our own lives. And Paul is saying, I want you to be living yours in freedom, not in the chains, not being brain chained to a religion, not being brain chained to other people's ideas who only teach them so that they'll look good.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, I tell you, this is powerful, powerful stuff, and we should not expect anything other than a powerful conclusion to this. Don, next week, we'll pick up in verse 6, but just as...
Well, I don't know where we've gotten up to. Did we get up to verse 4, verse 3, verse 6, verse 14?
We got up through verse 5.
Oh,
and
okay.
Then we did a little cheat and jumped forward to 12 and 13, but we made it through verse 5, but we're going to pick up in verse 6. And we're going to, now we've gone through and we've completely stripped away all the religious pretenses of this. If you see a brother taken in a fault. Now, I think we've done well on that. If you have any more questions on it, remember what the fault is. The fault is not breaking a law. The fault is keeping a law. Now, in verse 7, we're going to go through this. So don't miss next week. Be not deceived. God is not mocked.
Oh, you're going to
love this. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. All right. We're going to take up there next week. And oh my gosh, it's good news.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. If you'd like to know anything about the Gospel Revolution, then call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. In fact, hit any link. Just come into our house and put your feet up on the table and enjoy yourself. Grab something nice and tasty and just hang around for as long as you can. But now, it's good night from myself, Don Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Eva, Alabama.
And it is good night from Michael Williams here in Palm Beach Gardens. Let me also offer this, Don, at the end of this show. All of the gratitude I know how to say to gospel revolutionaries. And we've got new ones coming on board. I'm getting calls, Don, from people I've never heard of, never seen them online, and they're telling me, Michael, I'm listening. And well, where are you? When did you start? Man, I love your show, you and Don. They tell me, but yeah, I love both formats, the one where you and him kind of poked at each other and the one where you're doing, I really enjoyed both of them. And then the Tuesday night, I love that. These are people we've never heard of before.
Wow.
So number one, and I've gotten several calls like that this week, but let me tell you also several calls that I've gotten is people wanting to contribute. My goodness, folks, you have responded so overwhelmingly to need.
I would have to say that these people are more holy, righteous, and perfect than all the others, aren't they?
Well, if we did not want to dishonor them completely, we would. But since we don't want to dishonor them, we won't do that. But folks, thank you so much. You not only relieved a burden, you left the ship floating in deep enough waters to navigate. Thank you so much. You did not just rescue us from an emergency. My God, what you did this in this last part of the pledge drive, I didn't make any more phone calls. Everybody started calling me, Don. Thank you, guys. It was very heartwarming. We're on our way. Thank you so much.
Family, you really are the best family anyone could have. We sure hope that you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but remember, we'll be here to do the same thing all over again next week. Only...
I'm sure better.
Gospel Revolution.
Been gone to church since I was a boy. Now I'm old and I'm low on joy. I feel tired. Is there something I missed? Or is it just that I'm a Methodist? I got the Methodist blues. Sit in the sanctuary Sunday morn. Minister talks about a being reborn. I got a load of guilt that I've been carrying. I wonder if I should have been Unitarian. The organ is soupy, the pastor is bland. I leave afterward and I shake his hand. Sometimes I'd like to shake my fist. That's what it's like to be Methodist. I got the Methodist blues. Lot of odd people sitting in the pews want the sermon to reflect their views. Some of these Christians, they are the rudest. Maybe I ought to try being Buddhist. Ah, people gossip about who did what. The ladies' circle is a pain in the butt. I wanna slap their face or at least their wrist, but I can't 'cause I am a Methodist. I got the Methodist blues. It's not easy being Methodist. Troubles, we got a whole long list. We're too rational, too Socratic. I wish we were charismatic. Same 10 people always volunteer. Half of them old and the others just weird. I am blue and I'm getting more bluish. Maybe Jewish. Ah, everyone is afraid of change. Don't like anything new or strange. We get our underwear in a twist, and that's how it is with the Methodist. I got the Methodist blues. By John Wesley, not Chuck Berry or Elvis Presley. We're not so hip, but we persist. We go on being Methodist. We got the Methodist blues. When we die and go up in the air, St. Peter will hold out a diadem and say, shh, there are Baptists in there. They thought it would just be them. And if a Baptist you happen to meet, they may regard you as a foreigner. We got Catholics across the street and Muslims right around the corner. Oh, I got the Methodist blues. Oh, I got the Methodist blues.
You need a little old-time religion. You need a little churching up. A little Bible learning will keep your soul from burning. Yeah, you need a little churching up. I said a little Bible learning will keep your soul from burning. Yeah, you need a little churching. Churching up. Amen.
Gospel Revolution.